This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman.
Truth in Broadcasting.
Welcome back. I'm Laura Flanda sitting in for Tom. Tom, wherever you are, I hope you're having fun. Relax a little, why don't you? Hey, Laura Flanda's here with you from Radio Nation here, broadcasting live on Air America Radio. Thanks for having me. What a period we are in, people, and you are just the people to talk about all this. Let's discuss the role of we, the people, in our government. What kind of a leader do you want? What sort of leadership do you like? Let's remember, I know that our friend Tom is keen on the quotes of the day. Let's remember what Roosevelt said, FDR that is. Let us never forget that government is ourselves and not an alien power over us. The ultimate rulers of our democracy are not a president and senators and congressmen and government officials, but the voters of this country. That's us. All you truth seekers, all you folks who get tagged it at the end of every Tom Hartman program, it's us FDR is talking about in the same way it was us that Jefferson was talking about. And yet look at the state of our politics today. You have got in the news today mudslinging galore, robocalls slandering just about everybody on the GOP side and a few people on the Democratic side in South Carolina. You have money galore. In the second hour of this program, we're going to be talking with Craig Holman from Public Citizen about just how much money is being poured in by whom to buy the White House this November. So you got the mudslinging, you got the money grubbing, then you've got the media manipulation that would have us believe that an entire political campaign has nothing to do with the campaign, but only to do with the charisma or lack thereof of the leader. So what we've got is a lot of a morass to get through, leaving one key piece out of the picture, and that's us. Is the campaign really about the charisma of the leader, or is the campaign about the ground game, the organizer's skills, the motivation of the volunteers, the tools at their disposal? This gets to my question of the night. All right, afternoon or morning, depending on where you are. I had a long evening. Maybe we'll get to it. All right, the question for me right now is, what kind of a leader do we want in this country? It's the stuff of the national debate. It was being played out. This question was being played out in the Democratic debate on Tuesday in Las Vegas, when you had Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton laying out pretty clear and pretty different models of leadership. And I'll tell you, I sat in my living room with my partner, Elizabeth, and Elizabeth and I had completely different reactions to these two contenders. On the one hand, there is me listening to Barack Obama and saying, you know, he's got a point. We don't want leaders who have some rigid, ideologically fixed vision of what they want to do with the country exactly. We don't want another Bushite in there who thinks he's so clear that he's right that he doesn't need advice from anybody. I'm moved by the kind of style of Obama that is the organizer's style. And let's remember, he grew up came up as a community organizer in Chicago, worked with and learned from Saul Alinsky. The model of that kind of community organizing is the leader gets his or her skills, her strength, I mean, her leadership right to lead from the community and takes direction, as it were, from the community. So it's not just, you know, some ideologue coming in saying, this is what we're going to do. It's somebody who goes around the housing project of the community or surveys the church and says, okay, well, these seem to be your priorities. How about we try to get together and work on A, B, and C? Oh, you don't want to work on C? Well, we'll just work on A and B. That kind of thing. There's something to be said for that model of leadership, and we can talk about what is to be said for it as the program continues. But on the other hand, so I'm thinking, well, that's, you know, that's a refreshing break, and that is consistent with Barack Obama's organizing message of we and us and creating a new nation of a new level of engagement. And American people want to be more engaged than they've wanted to be for years, it seems to me. There's an interesting piece in the USA Today about just how much enthusiasm and how much willingness there seems to be in the American populace right now to get up and vote and do more than that this race. We'll talk about that. But that, you know, resonated with me. Meanwhile, Elizabeth is listening to that and thinking that is just wishle washle waffle. And when she hears Hillary Clinton say, I am going to be a hands-on leader, I am on day one going to know what to do. She's on day one going to know where the bathrooms are. That's a start. She's on day one going to know what to do. She's got advisors who've been experienced in the White House. She's going to be able to walk in there and do battle with the right and do after battle with whatever other enemies we may have. Elizabeth says, great. That's the kind of leadership we need. That's the kind of person who you can trust to make a snap decision. I'm not going to have to consult with a committee. I'm saying, I'll take the committee, I think. I'd love to hear from you. 866-303-2270. 866-303-AAR0 is the number to call if you want to weigh in on this. What kind of a leader do you want? Do you want the leader that says to you, I'll fix it. I'll be your servant, which is very much the pledge that Hillary Clinton is running on, that she will be the kind of strong leader that will keep us out of trouble, that will respond to the problems of the nation of the day? Or do you want the kind of leader who frankly puts a little bit more work in your hands? 866-303-2270, that's the number to call. You're being called by Barack Obama to do more than simply vote. You're being called by Barack Obama to get involved in your community, to get engaged. The whole style of his campaign, I was just in Colorado Springs, not the most radical place in the world. I mean, let's face it, you drive into town, and there is on the north end of town, the biggest Air Force Academy. And forgive me, all you Colorado Springs listeners, if this is boring to you, but this enormous Air Force Academy with a chapel in the design of a rocket launcher that is apparently, and this is what I was told, maybe somebody can confirm or deny this, I was told that the National Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs is three times the landmass size of Manhattan. Now, that is big. So that's at the north end of town. At the south end of town, you've got the NORAD, North Atlantic Radio Electronic Defense System, basically the spy central for the military, lurking on the mountaintop there. And in between, you've basically got a valley of evangelical megachurches, including Focus on the Family, New Life. I actually went to a New Life service, so I'll tell you about that maybe. Anyway, this is not your radical place. And yet before, I wanted to go there before many days had passed since the Iowa caucuses, because I wanted to see who was on the ground before the paid staff of these different campaigns came in. What kind of volunteer movement or presence do these different campaigns have? And I'll tell you, I was taken aback. I'll tell you about it right after the break. 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-AAR0. We'll take your calls. Talk to me about leadership, all of you out there. What kind do you want? And is there a way to have both? I'm Laura Flanders, filling in for Tom Hartman. A lot coming up on today's program about Nevada, the Nevada primary, about money in this race, about what difference women will make, the presence of women in the legislature in Nevada on that primary this weekend, and more. Stay tuned.
Tom Hartman Program, taking back the mainstream media.
3 hours a day,
5 days a week.
We're back. I'm Laura Flanders, and you're listening to, well, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Show here on Air America. I'm sitting in for Tom today and tomorrow, so thanks for having me. Let's take some calls, and then I'll tell you what I found in Colorado Springs. How about that for a keep you on the hook, edge of your seat kind of a thing? Evelyn in Longmont, Colorado. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Glad to have you.
Thank you for letting me on your show. I just wanted to say some things about Obama. I've been watching him from the very beginning.
When was that for you?
Oh, when he first started, when was it?
Was it his convention speech?
No, it probably was on C-SPAN and places like that,
okay.
You know. And there's so many things that I do like about him, because I used to train people, and they've been doing the same thing for years and years. And you come in and you show them a different way, a faster way, a money-saving way, and they just can't. You know, I mean, they've been doing this forever. And that's the way I look. I love her, Hillary. But I look, she's the same old stuff. He's willing to really go in a different direction. And I sure think we got this one window of opportunity to take it. Another thing I like
about... So you would have to say, when I asked the question, folks, if you missed the beginning, about what kind of leadership style do you like? I mean, I think it's a fair argument, a fair debate between those
well,
who say the real control, the real leader who tells us where to go and what she's going to do, and the type of leader who says, I'm going to bring everybody together and we're going to discuss it.
Well, he's a leader that's going to go in a different direction. And another thing, this is unheard of. He wants to make a database that we can look things up on the computer to see what Congress is trying to pass. You know, that just stuff goes right by us. He's trying to bring us in on it.
Well, I think Hillary said, to be fair, I think she said the very same thing this week.
Well, she took it from him, though. He started this. Like everybody keeps saying change, he started that.
Okay.
You know.
All right, so we have an Evelyn enthusiast. I mean, we have an Obama enthusiast.
Okay, I have another thing, too.
Oh, very quickly.
I really think your foreign countries will look on him a little better and deal with him better.
Yeah, I mean, there is a point at which style is substance. You know, we tend to polarize these two things, one style, one substance. You know, what do you want? There is a point at which these two come together, and I think it might be right there that, in fact, having having the person of Barack Obama and the shift in government, preferably without any kind of, dirty tricks, and certainly without blood in the streets, from, Texan bomb the world to Obama make peace with the world, would be sending a real message, I think it would, different from Hillary, who, let's not forget, she'll be the first woman if she's president, but she does carry that Clinton name, which makes it have an element of repeat there. All right, let's go to another caller. Let's hear from Emily in Livingston, New Jersey. Hey, Emily, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm going to make a real, real fast comment.
Go for it.
I want to say, first of all, you're asking about types of leadership,
uh-huh.
and you're using these two people as examples. What the American people want is effectiveness. There are many kinds of leadership that lead to effectiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And I also feel that regarding Hillary, you're totally misrepresenting her. I find the press doing this over and over again.
All I said was quoting her. She says she's going to be a hands-on leader from day one.
Well, what does that mean? That means she's going to take care of business. It uh-huh. does not mean she's going to be a control freak. But I'm going to go through this real fast, because when I talk to you on the phone,
right.
I can't always hear what you're saying.
It's all right. Breathe, so breathe,
like
breathe.
Say,
Emily,
opinion,
slow down just a little okay. so people can hear you. Okay, go. Okay.
Not only are you misrepresenting Hillary, what I feel she's saying is that she has a particular type experience,
mm-hmm.
so she wouldn't enter the Oval Office green.
Mm-hmm.
Now, regarding Obama, not having experience doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be open-minded and wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It might mean that you end up with a mess. He's more likely to people. Well, I'm not even going to use him. People without experience are more likely to show all of us, anyone who doesn't have experience in a particular area we're more likely to lack necessary judgment. But I would say, going back to Hillary, that her experience would give us a government that would be more like Bill Clinton.
So what do you say, Emily, to the woman we just spoke to, who said that she thought that that the element of change represented by Barack Obama was important at this time. We can make more of a change than by going back to a Clinton, no matter what.
Well, what I would say is, when people want change, they want things to be better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've got a total mess here.
Yeah, we don't want just change for change's sake.
A change,
right?
Back, I think that's the press again. I think that's the press going into people's minds, misrepresenting and making people actually think something that they don't really think. I think there is probably not a person in this country, a person in the world, who wouldn't want to go back to the days of Bill Clinton where we didn't go around killing people.
Well, I don't know about that.
Oil.
There are a few Iraqis out there, and people in a few other countries like Yugoslavia that do remember people being killed in the Clinton administration. But let's go to Kevin quickly before break. Kevin in Fort Collins, Colorado. Hey, Kevin.
Hello, Laura. Enjoy the show. Nice to talk to you again. I talked to you a few years ago when we used to carry you here in Fort Collins, AM 760 on the weekends. But anyway, I want to get right to it and talk about the person that no one wants to talk about, John Edwards. John Edwards is the person that doesn't take corporate money, washed in lobbyist money like the other two candidates do. Brock, his campaign's well-funded, and so is Hillary.
Now, Kevin, on the issue of leadership, where maybe I have unfairly polarized these two, but I think it's a helpful discussion. Where on that spectrum do you think Edwards is?
Well, on leadership, he's showing it. He's not going to be led around by the nose by big corporations. Goldman Sachs has contributed to Brock's campaign. Hillary's been highly funded by the healthcare industry. With big contributions come big favors and big expectations of favors.
He certainly didn't get much of an answer, did he, Kevin, when he asked Barack Obama, why do you think people make those contributions? Good question. He didn't get any answer.
Very good question. Poor answer. Obama also had a bad answer when he took on Hillary about the fact that with terrorist and her comment about that, the right-wing media went absolutely nuts on that. And with those kind of gaffes that Obama keeps making, he talked about, you know, his fact that he wasn't very careful with his paperwork and that type of thing. Those little gaffes like that, and then Hillary went and copied Edwards' comment about service.
Right. Well, it goes back to what our last caller was saying, was with lack of experience maybe comes likelihood of making a mistake. But I won't forget the first caller who was so moved by a campaign that talks about change and about everybody. Thanks for all of your calls. When we come back, we'll hear from Bob Fulkerson of PLAN, an extraordinary coalition working on the election in Nevada. I'm Laura Flanders. Stay tuned.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Back. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show here on Air America Radio. Welcome to all of you, coast to coast. Glad to have you with us. The number here is 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. Well, I guess you'll just have to wait for me to tell you what it was like in Colorado Springs. But let me just say, in this not the most progressive place on the planet, when they did finally open a Barack Obama campaign office, meaning a staffed office with people who are paid, et cetera, they already had done enough grassroots work, the volunteers, that 300 folks showed up for the celebration. They had 140 precinct captains already ready to work the caucus. This is, as I said, before the paid staff got there. 90 students at Colorado College, not a very radical place. They're in the same city as, focused on the family and the military, you name it. They've got 90 students there signed up before the paid workers get in there. It speaks to a level of passion at that campaign at the grassroots level that I think is fascinating. I'm not weighing in at this moment on who would make the best president, but boy, that campaign has me excited at the level of how many people are getting engaged, how much the organizing is putting power into the hands of the people, how much the people who are working in that campaign feel they're part of something bigger than them. I'll tell you, I was impressed and excited, and it is part of what has me excited about this election. Yes, there's the mudslinging, and we're seeing all these nasty, slanderous robocalls in South Carolina, just as we did 4 years ago. Yes, there's the money grubbing, and we're going to talk in our second hour with a guy who has a very strange title. He is the government ethics lobbyist for Public Citizen website. Now, that doesn't mean that he's lobbying, he's lobbying for government ethics, but he's also taking on the lobbyists, if you know what I mean. He's going to be talking about just how much money is going into this race and from whom, for what. getting to the heart of John Edwards' question this Tuesday. What do people give all that money for? So you got the money grubbing, you've got the mudslinging, you've got the media manipulation that would have us believe that only the candidates and their charisma matters, the actual people involved in the campaign below that really play no part in it. It's the problem with horse race coverage. It makes us feel like the only players that matter are the horses, and that gives us all the sort of message that it's okay for us to sit it out. But the exciting thing is that people, look at USA Today, American voters are more engaged and excited about this election than we have seen in years. By a 2-to-1 survey, according to USA Today, people that were polled say that they were more enthusiastic than usual about voting this year. 9 in 10 say they believe it makes a difference. 62% were more enthusiastic about this year's presidential race. And one of the things that's getting more people more excited is the change in the schedule of the primaries. Now, many in the media find it a drag. Oh, that's so front-loaded. What are we going to do all year? We've got to be in so many places at once. But in a state like Nevada, where people will go to the polls and caucus on Saturday, it really is providing a role in this process for the people of that state that they never enjoyed before. And the caucus system, unlike the primary system, the caucus system where people have to look at each other face to face, talk with their neighbors, and really hash this stuff out, gets people engaged in a way that, well, it really increases their level of participation, not just at the voting level, but at the sort of deliberative level, deciding, thinking about stuff. I think it's exciting, and I know our next guest thinks it's exciting, too. His name is Bob Fulkerson. He is the founder and director of PLAN, the Progressive Leadership Alliance of Nevada. PLAN is an extraordinary coalition of nonprofit groups. I think it was 41 or 42 members last time I looked. And Bob, welcome to the program. I want to get your take on what's going on.
Well, thanks. It's great to be here. It is. It's hard to overestimate the level of excitement and energy and fun that people are having with these caucuses.
Fun? Did you say fun?
Oh, it's, well, I mean, there's some blood on the ground, all right, between friends that, you know, people who were friends 6 months ago, and right now they've gone to blows. But, you know, beyond that, the fun in terms of seeing people who have not been engaged before, who've never done politics before, learning how to knock on doors, learning how to persuade people, learning how to do a field campaign. And not just one or two people, but we're talking thousands,
no.
thousands, and particularly young people who are going to be, you know, and these are Nevadans who are going to be here to help build our movement in the future. I mean, to me, that is a lot of fun.
Now, this is different from 4 years ago, although people will remember Nevada was a battleground state in the generals, but there was never this kind of excitement in the first early primary season.
Well, 4 years ago, they all parachuted in, you know, and they all came in and told us what we should be doing.
Now,
and this time, it's a lot more organic. It's just like in Colorado Springs, where a lot of the groundwork was laid by volunteers, and then the staff came in a respectful way, has been working with the locals to build a movement.
Now, tell me how that works, and describe for our audience a little bit the PLAN coalition. I mean, you've got members that span from gay and lesbian groups to environmental groups to unions to Native Americans. Extraordinary group.
Well, you just said it, and we're trying to pull all of those sometimes potentially competing and disparate interests into working on common campaigns around racial, environmental, and economic equity issues.
And are you succeeding?
Well, we've done some pretty groundbreaking work in terms of getting $1 billion in new taxes raised to spend on education and human services issues. We were able to reenfranchise 44,000 former inmates who have been shut out of our political system because they made a mistake. They paid for their mistakes, and we think they should be part of the system now, and they are.
All right, so we're giving people a sense of, you have some credentials to talk about all this. And tell us a little bit about the kind of ways in which people are organizing around this campaign. And, you know, a lot of expectation was there that if the caucus was moved up into the early part of the schedule, as it has been, it will give new voice to the Latino voters who are in such a number there in Nevada, to the labor voice so big in the south of the state, to the environmentalists who you work with up in Reno and others. Has it done that? Do you feel like your issues, healthcare, are in a new, you know, have gained new priority or attention in this race?
Well, you know, I would say yes and no. I mean, yes, in terms of that, you know, the issues of Yucca Mountain, the issues of, you know, home foreclosures of, you know, Las Vegas is number one, some of the healthcare issues. But, you know, at the same time, the level of discussion has not been as deep. And I think we certainly saw that at the so-called black-brown debate last week, or, you know, a couple nights ago, where we really expected a much more frank and open and candid discussion about race, and racial equity issues. We just didn't get that.
Now, yeah, I was disappointed that the candidates, so Hillary Clinton anyway, her comment was, and I know people are not going to like this, but this is what she said. She said, Barack Obama and I have a shared agreement, or we're in agreement that we don't want race and gender to play a role in this race. Well, it will, of course, those things will, of course, play a role in this race. They play a role in our daily life, minute to minute, in the air we breathe. Anyway, so I'm with you. It was almost like, let's get this over with. Let's not even talk about it too much.
Right, I blame the moderators for that, too. I think that, what do we expect from two corporate media types that, you know, have been stewed in this thing that we don't talk about this in polite company. Let's just, you know, get on with it.
And, of course, there's not a person of color in the picture when it
comes
to the interviewing.
Yeah.
Have you been disappointed by the attention that John Edwards has been getting, particularly in Nevada, where a lot of people believe that he would really plug into the labor community, resonate with that community? He's done a lot of work there, been there for many, many months. He does seem to be getting short shrift, as everybody says.
He really is. Yeah, it's really unfair. There's a great blog here, the Las Vegas Gleaner, and you know he wrote this morning about the fact that Edwards does not exist. And yeah, I mean the local press, the national press, is not paying attention to this guy as much as they should be, because he is neck and neck. I mean, they're all three bunched up with, you know, roughly 30% apiece, and anything can happen on Saturday.
Mm. Now you've talked with all of the candidates, is that right?
Yes.
And what do you think?
Well, I think they're fan. You know, I think they're great. I, you know, we all, you know, we have people on our staff, our leadership, and our member groups who are, you know, roughly, you know, some are going for Hillary, some are going for Edwards. I'm personally an Obama supporter on my own time. Of course, Plan doesn't endorse, but on my own time, that's who I'm going for.
Now, why?
Well, actually, you know, I did a lot of thinking about this. I actually did some meditating on it, and what came to me clearly was that, you know, Obama has the ability to inspire change in our country, mm. and he can move our country in a positive direction. And you know, so that's who I had to go for.
Okay, well, I'm not going to make you, you know, we didn't bring you on here to be an endorser, but I am interested in the sense, in the subject of leadership. You know, here you are, you head up an organization that is the coalition of all these many, many groups. In the first part of the program, I was talking about the question, you know, the different styles of leadership that exist and that have been a subject of debate this week, most notably on Tuesday there in that Democratic debate. You've got on the one hand, and yes, this is to oversimplify, but to make the point, Hillary Clinton talking about a hands-on leader, that she will have the savvy and the experience and the know-how to be able to make executive decisions on day one and stick to them. On the other, you have a much more kind of grassroots organizer style of leadership coming from Barack Obama, where he says, I don't keep my desk very clean, and I rely on other people to help me with that. And in fact, his leadership style is way more pull the community together, pull the community, in which case I'm assuming in the White House that would be, you know, senior advisors. And we'll make a decision altogether. Sort of fear of the rigidity of ideological certainty that he saw and we, so many of us, saw in the Bush White House.
Mm-hmm.
From your experience as a leader of a coalition of groups that are so different, how do you? What are your thoughts about how the best leaders work?
Well, I think the best leaders, you know, lead by example, not just by words. The best leaders love the people that they're working with, and love, you know, isn't just this feeling. It's actions, it's deeds, it's the willingness to get down and dirty in the same way that you're asking your people to, you know, and, you know, and I really love the fact that, you know, the Barack comes out of an organizing background.
Mm. And by that standard, how do you read the Clinton campaign's promises in the sense that she does have a loyal team around her? She's clearly managed to lead advisors with her for many years. There's a loyalty there that is not to be sneezed at.
Absolutely. And the people who love Hillary will do anything for her, and I really admire that about her. She does engender the loyalty and the sense of commitment. My mom and dad, I mean, gosh, talk about divisions. They are just royal. They, you know, really, they have organizers for Hillary living with them, and they will, you know, they're emblematic of the supporters for Hillary.
All right. Now, one other question that some people, well, you know, that I want to make sure that we cover. There were some people, when you talk about deeds rather than words, President Clinton came out in favor of the lawsuit to shut down the caucus sites at the casinos this past weekend, right after Hillary Clinton had distanced herself from this suit brought by the NEA, the Education Association. How is that playing, and is she going to pay a price for any of that?
This is one of the worst divisions that we've seen, you know, within the House of Labor, within the left in Nevada. It is a very bitter dispute. It's horrible. I mean, my take on is it, you know, despite the merits of the suit, why didn't they do this, six months ago?
What everybody says is, well, they were waiting to see which way the casino workers would go with their endorsement. When they saw that the casino workers were going for Obama, that's when they switched.
Well, I think that's a pretty good observation.
Ouch. All right, going back to the Clinton campaign for a second, she has a series of new ads running in Nevada, I understand. One pitching itself pretty closely to women, talking about her experience. Another focusing pretty tightly on finances, the housing crunch. How is it to be a Nevadan these days? You must have ads coming at you from every direction. Are you getting robocalls, too?
Oh, God, yeah, tons of robocalls. The mail has been really good, actually, lots of TV ads. But, you know, it's the but the great thing is being able to go to events. I mean, you know, John Edwards, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama are all here in Reno, for the next couple of days. They've all been down in Las Vegas, and there's opportunities for people to go and really, you know, literally talk to them or their surrogates about, you know, what they care about. And we've never had that before. I mean, we've been this backwater podunk state that was great to send your nuclear waste to and go to a brothel if you wanted to and look at the sagebrush, but we've never had this level of excitement or attention, and we love it.
We're talking with Bob Fulkerson. You can find out more about PLAN, the Progressive Leadership Alliance of Nevada, at plannevada.org. That's one N, plannevada.org. Leave us, Bob, with your thoughts. You know, it is easy sometimes to look at the nature of our elections and say, oh, goodness, with so much money, $400 million really minimum for any candidate to run. And we're going to talk about that in the next segment, the next hour. With so much media manipulation, you just can't put a foot wrong without it being played a gazillion times in the media. With so much mudslinging in the robocalls and who knows what else, what role can organized people really play? What do you say to those folks?
Well, we're seeing it here in Nevada. We're seeing people, you know, again, you know, particularly young people who are being involved in this stuff for the first time and knocking on doors and, you know, in the best way. I mean, those Yale studies about how to convince people to vote. It's not an ad. It's not a robocall. It is one neighbor talking to another. But even more than that is if you belong to an organization, it's that organizational member talking to another member that changes people, and that persuades people. And so we're building that into the culture of our movement here in Nevada, using these caucuses as a way to build that. So
well, it's really exciting, and I bet people can plug into what PLAN is doing if they go to your website. Bob, thanks so much for being with us. You kicked off an exciting couple of days as we anticipate the Saturday caucuses there.
www.planevada.org.
You got it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll be back after the break. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show on Air America Radio. We'll take more of your calls, 866-303-2270 on the other side.
Tom Hartman. Hartman Program, the true people's radio. Tom Hartman.
The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege.
Yeehaw, right, not a privilege. I couldn't agree more. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Tom Hartman. When we come back, we will take your calls, and we've got a great debate going among our callers here about what it means to be a leader and what kind of leader they want. I'm dying to talk to you. We'll get to you right after the headlines. We'll also talk to a man who's put together the stats on just what money, which is to say how much from whom, is going into these different races. You've heard it from a lot of people this evening, this afternoon, whatever time of day it is with you. You've heard it from a lot of people that nearly all the top-tier candidates on both sides, except for Edwards, are foregoing publicly public financing in this election. The dollar amounts basically are adding us up to $1 billion campaign. Our first $1 billion campaign. And some of the money is hard to figure out because it's what you call bundling. Candidates are allowed to take unlimited, unregulated cash pulled together from lots of different folks. And we don't get a sense of just who this money is coming from in the way that we did when it just came from one lobbyist. So bundling is going to be the topic with our guest, Craig Holman, and it's a kind of warm and fuzzy word, I think, for something that scares the heck out of me. Maybe the whole debate we hear among the candidates about lobbying is just so much kaflooey, because the reality is money is driving this race unless we stop it. I'm Laura Flanders. The Tom Hartman Program will be right back after the headlines. You're listening to Air America Radio. Stay with us. A lot more coming up.
Common sense from the radical middle. This is the Tom Hartman Program. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Tom Hartman. Defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
All right, well, Tom is out doing exactly that. You can see him in his Protecting the Nation outfit. I'm sitting in here protecting just this little microphone, I guess. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom, wherever you are, have a little bit of fun. Relax a little. Let your hair down. Does he ever do that? 866-303-2270 is the number to call. How can he write so many books? 866-303-2270 is the number to call, although we've got a zillion people lined up to speak. We'll get to you in just a second. Let me just remind you what we've got coming up at the bottom of this hour, or rather in the next segment. We're going to talk about lobbyist bundling. Now, it's not bungling, and it's not cuddling. It's somewhere in between. It's a new report just out from WhiteHouseForSale.org about just how much lobbyist bundling is going on. Sounds like rolling folks up in a blanket and rolling them downhill. No, it's not that. It is putting together enormous amounts of money and giving it to candidates and then still saying you're not accepting lobbyist contributions. There's about a third of $1 billion of this stuff right now in the 2008 race going to all the top contenders. We'll talk about who's getting what and what does this mean for all this talk about not taking lobbyist funds right in the next segment with Craig Holman from Public Citizen. All right, let's take some of your calls. I'm going to do a thing that I hope won't be too scary for all of you. I'm going to bring on two callers who I think have slightly differing opinions and have you discuss it in a sane and civilized way. This is not a calculation or a recipe for a catfight. This is not about mudslinging. I happen to believe, as I think Tom does, that we the people are quite capable of having a conversation across differences and still liking each other afterwards. All right, so Andy, come on the line. Andy in Seattle, Washington. Glad to have you. It says here that you're kind of keen on Obama. Tell us why.
Well, I actually respect all three my concern is, well, the only thing I've determined is I will not be able to vote for Edwards. I love his passion. I agree with what he wants to achieve, but he really appeals to a much more sexy attitude of combating. He wants to beat down the corporations and take back control, all of which I agree with. But we need an attitude of win-win. And Obama, at least by what he says, seems to be trying to be inclusive of attitudes and points of view that he agrees with and those that he does not agree with.
All right. Stay right there then, Andy. Let's have you talk with Alicia, who's in McMinnville, Oregon. McMinnville? Alicia, are you there?
You've got it.
McMinnville. I like it. Tell me your take on all this.
Well, my take, number one, I'm not, when you said you're going to have two opposing viewpoints.
No, I said slightly differing.
Okay. Is that when I first saw Obama speak in the convention a few years ago, I was brought to tears by the man and his meteoric rise, to where he's now a candidate for presidency in such a short period of time has been phenomenal.
Uh-huh.
But I think the average American, he says that he's bringing us, we're going to help make this change, is a bit idealistic, because the average American hardly has time to take their kids out to dinner because they're working too many jobs.
I mean, I think this is exactly the debate that is happening around the country. And you're right. Maybe I did say opposing, but I didn't mean it. I just meant slightly opposing. I think it's true.
Okay.
We want people, we want someone who will be a leader. We don't want someone who will be a leader like George W. Bush will be a leader. We want to be united.
Anybody would be better.
We want to be united, but we don't want to be united and taken off in a terrible direction. Andy, what are your thoughts? Alicia's kind of obviously keen on Obama's style, but worried he doesn't perhaps have the experience.
Well, all we can do is go by what he says he wants to try to achieve, and I think his idealism and his dedication to trying to find the win-win. And what I'd like to hear more in the common dialogue amongst the participants is the phrase common ground. I'm a folk singer locally, and I play in churches. And one of the things that I say at times is, I like singing for you people and with you people, but it's not enough. I like to envision that on one side of this church is Bin Laden and Saddam Hussein, and over there on the other side is Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell. Now let's all sing together.
Yeah, but
that's our task, and it's not easy, and it's not sexy.
Well, Alicia,
it's what we have to do.
Alicia, what do you think? I mean, Andy's saying unity in face of these polar extremes is valuable in and of itself.
Well, he and I are very similar in that I sing also. I used to sing quite a bit. I've not heard Senator Clinton say she is not for people working together. I have not heard her say she does not want Americans to help in the campaign. The thing that I feel strongly about, like I said, I'm not totally one way or the other yet. I'm still listening and learning. And I've done a lot of my learning in our own capital around the politicians here.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not a happy place. That is a very difficult place for the average person to have to go and try to make change. We have not been able to make change in Washington, D.C., no matter how hard we've all called.
Well, that speaks, Alicia, in a sense, to what Andy's talking about, that there is something to be said for just encouraging people to get back involved in the process. It's not going to kill you. It's not going to hurt you. It's going to be a good experience rather than a miserable one. Alicia first and then Andy.
Okay. I think that is phenomenal. It is phenomenal. The American people are finally truly very, very involved because we've lost trust.
Right.
Because we don't believe the people we have elected are doing everything they can to fight for us out here.
All right, Alicia.
The thing I wanted to say about Senator Clinton was that right now, our country is in drastic need of drastic, immediate change. She knows the back rooms of the politics because that's where half of the politics goes on, is in the back rooms. And we need, it's like our planet needs drastic, dramatic change right now, not in a month, not in a year.
And you think that's going to happen in those back rooms?
Let's put it this way. I haven't had any proof that that isn't where it happens.
Mm.
Because of what I have seen go on with our the national, you know,
okay,
in the Washington, D.C. arena.
Got
as
it,
well
Alicia. Andy, come back in. What about the fear that people have, and I think Alicia's raising it to some extent, that, you know, we can only afford to be disappointed so many times. I mean, we can only afford to get this kind of movement, excitement aroused around a candidate, as Barack Obama has managed to do, and then watch him give it all away to lobbyists or the Pentagon or some godforsaken thing like that. There is something to be said for somebody you do really know already. What do you think, Andy?
Well, I don't mean to indicate that I'm against Hillary at all, because I think she has demonstrated that she can work across the aisle with the political opponents, and I think that's very important. My only decision so far is that, as much as I love the passion of Mr. Edwards, I will not be able to vote for him, because he's trained in win-lose. And I like him being on my side. It's sort of like Bobby.
But maybe Kennedy. There is a win-lose in all of this. If we're going to win national single-payer health care, a whole lot of for-profit investors in private health insurers are going to lose something.
Absolutely. However, we can't deny the fact that they are out there, and we have to deal with them.
All right.
Walmarts of the world are not going away.
All right, got it. Now, congratulations to both of you. If I had one of those applause tracks, I would play it right
now.
Thank
you.
Great conversation. We'll have more. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. I'm Laura Flanders, and that was Andy and Alicia. We'll be back with Craig Holman from Public Citizen and White House for Sale right after this.
Helping you win the water cooler wars. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Tom Hartman. I should have mentioned there is a Tom Hartman website and blog. Now, I'm not sure it's updated during the show, but you could post a comment there and see. TomHartmanShow.com. www.TomHartmanShow.com. If you want to call in, you can on 866-303-2270. Next, we're going to talk about bundling. Yep, well, it sounds sort of fun. Bundle. Sounds like bundling up to go out into the cold. But actually, it's not. And all the presidential contenders are doing it, or just about all. And by all accounts, it's a pretty nifty way to obscure the support you're getting from lobbyists. Here to talk about it is none other than Craig Holman, who is the government ethics lobbyist for Public Citizen. All of the information we're talking about, by the way, will be at whitehouseforsale.org. Craig, welcome to the program. It's true, bundling is a kind of cozy word for something not so nice.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here. Yes, bundling is a fundraising practice that is basically brought the death knell to the presidential public financing system. Ever since the Watergate era, we had a public financing system in effect that worked fairly well for presidential candidates, at least the major party candidates. It placed limits on the size of contributions, so no individual could offer such a large contribution as to buy favor from the presidential candidate. And it provided spending ceilings that kept spending relatively limited, and it balanced the resources between the major party candidates to such a point that literally half the time through the history since 1976, the challenger was able to defeat a sitting incumbent president. However, all that has gone to the wayside beginning in the 2000 presidential election. George Bush devised a way of getting around the contribution limits by designating bundlers. These will be CEOs or lobbyists connected with a special business.
And we remember the former CEO of Enron, Kenneth Lay, was essentially a bundler for Bush, wasn't he?
Was a bundler also, right. And these people would approach the campaign and say, I want to bring in $100,000 or $200,000 for the campaign, and I want you to know it's me and my business bringing in this money for you. And the campaign would assign the bundler a tracking number like 671. And the bundler would go out and bundle all these individual contributions from fellow colleagues and business associates, have them mail in their individual contributions of $2,300 is the maximum allowed at this point, and then write on the memo section of the check 671. That way the campaign knows when 100 of those checks come in, amounting to almost $250,000, it came from that bundler and that particular company.
So if you are trying to buy influence and you can't do it the old style way, this is a pretty, well, convenient way to do it.
This is how you buy influence. This way the campaign knows that Boeing Corporation brought in $250,000 for my campaign. And, you know, any time, all these bundlers, I mean, they work hard at raising all this money. I mean, it's almost like a full-time job. And anybody who's going to put that much effort into fundraising and deliver that much money clearly wants something in return.
How much money are we talking about, Craig?
Well, at this point, the presidential candidates have raised about $334 million. We are expecting to see a $1 billion presidential campaign for the first time ever in American history this year.
And how does it break down by candidate?
Well, at this point, Obama and Clinton are leading the pack, running with about $80 million each.
From how many different folks?
I didn't hear you that.
From how many different how many different bundles?
In terms of the bundlers, Obama has 359 bundlers that we've been able to track so far. Clinton, 322 bundlers. Edwards is leading the pack with 665 bundlers, but so far he's only been able to pull in about $30 million.
Now, how different is this from, I want to throw a party for my candidate. I want to get some credit for it. I'm going to use my pull with my friends. Maybe by holding a party or promising them all gifts, whatever. And then me saying, look, isn't this great? I managed to inspire all these folks to write a check that maybe they would have written anyway, but maybe they wouldn't. It seems innocent at that level, doesn't it?
Well, any time the fundraising is done specifically for the purpose of making sure the candidate knows you are the one bringing in this money, there is an ulterior motive behind that, and that is, to get your foot in the door, to get access to the candidate, or at the very worst, to buy influence with the candidate. When we're talking about the bundling program specifically, I mean, that is nothing but making sure the candidate knows you have brought in, $250,000, $500,000, with strings attached to that money.
There's no question this was the big unanswered question in Tuesday night's debate. It came from John Edwards, which is maybe ironic because you said he was the biggest bundler, but he has fewer lobbyists. I think no lobbyists, or maybe just one among those bundlers. He asked point blank when he was given an opportunity to ask Barack Obama a question. He said to him, why do you think people give this money? Why do you think, I think he said, corporations contribute, but we got the point. You didn't get an answer. What's the answer in your view?
Well, there are different reasons why people give money. When individuals are giving money, many individuals just really like the candidate and like the program that they're offering. But when you want to give more than your individual contribution and you want to make sure that the candidate knows that you're bringing in large amounts of money, you are expecting something in return. And, we have seen this. I mean, on the WhiteHouseForSale.org website, we have tried documenting what are these favors that get returned.
Mm-hmm.
And taking a look at the Bush bundlers from 2000-2004, we have identified that one out of every four of these bundlers have received some sort of governmental appointment, either as ambassadorships, ambassador to France, or even cabinet posts. We've been able to document the relationship between regulations, or in the Bush administration, deregulations, that favor his biggest bundlers.
Mm.
For instance, Thomas Kuhn of the Edison Electric Institute was one huge bundler for George Bush, accounting for anywhere in the order of almost $6 million, possibly. And in return, George Bush started deregulating the utility industry.
Very nice quid pro quo. Craig, will you stay with us over the break? Maybe we'll have a couple of questions for you. We'll talk more about bundling, who's doing it and why, with Craig Holman from WhiteHouseForSale.org. When we come back, I'm Laura Flanders. This is Tom Hartman's program on Air America Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
We're back. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Tom Hartman's show here on Air America Radio. I guess the space music isn't to suggest that Tom has gone off into space. Just simply that he's somewhere else right now. He'll be back. You got me for today and tomorrow, and I'm looking forward to it. Thanks so much for inviting me to be here, everybody. All right, so the number is 866-303-2270. If you want to find out who the heck this Laura Flanders is, you can go to my website, lauraflanders.com. I do a show called Radio Nation here, et cetera, et cetera. That's lauraflanders.com. Let's continue our conversation right now with our guest, Craig Holman. He works with Public Citizen in their WhiteHouseForSale.org website. They look at government ethics and lobbying. And I want to ask you, Craig, about the legality of everything we've been discussing. Before the break, we were talking about bundling. And bundling is the practice by which individuals can gather together either their workplace, workmates, or their social network, or whatever it is, their professional circle, to make maximum contributions that they can to the candidate of choice, and then that individual gets to bundle all those contributions up and send them off to the candidate and presumably get credit for it. At least that's what he or she is seeking. It reminds me a little bit of a story that's in the paper this week about Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi, the guy who was appointed to replace Trent Lott. We were supposed to get away from some of this kind of dirty earmarking and politicization when Trent Lott was, kicked out, basically. But no, apparently here's a situation where Wicker got a $6 million earmark for a defense contractor whose executives were among his top campaign contributors. And were represented in the matter by Wick's former congressional chief of staff. Now, that's a very legal situation in the sense that the chief of staff was almost immediately hired by this defense corporation, defense contractor. The contractor executives make money, you know, contribute money, not illegally. Maybe they're bundlers. And then in return, they get the $6 million earmark in the budget. In this case, the company in question was the Manassas-based Aurora Flight Science Company. It stands to mind, this was happening this week, it comes to mind because this isn't illegal either. And yet, it just tastes miserably wrong. What can we do when these practices don't actually break any rules?
Yeah, there's very little legislation that addresses the bundling activity, and by the way, I mean the Wicker example highlights the real problem behind bundling. I mean, many bundlers are really expecting things in return, whether it is a government appointment.
Well, I don't mind them expecting. What I don't like is them getting.
Earmarks, government contracts, deregulation. I mean, offshore oil drilling. The 29 of the leading companies of offshore oil drilling were major bundlers for the Bush campaign, and we've seen them continue unfettered with their business practices. I mean, that's the point of bundling.
So how do we fetter them? I mean, if they're not breaking any laws.
In terms of legislation, there was a brand new law just passed, the Lobbying and Ethics Reform Law, and that only partly addresses the problem.
No, that's the one that Barack Obama claims credit for, that you can't receive lunch sitting down or something?
That's right, and Obama was critical in getting the passage of this law through. And one of the provisions that was put in there, since this law only dealt with lobbyists, it didn't go beyond that. Any lobbyists who serve as bundlers have to be disclosed on the FEC website. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to lobbyist bundlers, we'll be able to track them coming this summer when the law gets implemented. But lobbyists are only about 10% of the bundlers. So literally 90% of this bundling operation will be below board. I mean, it's a secret stealth operation that only the campaigns and the bundlers know about.
I mean, I just don't see any way to solve this problem as long as there are no caps on how much can be spent, period, on these races. If it's going to be about who wins the most money, it is going to, that money is going to come in whatever way it can. I simply don't see any alternative but publicly financed elections capped. Every election for at every level, there needs to be a cap. The government needs to pay for it. It needs, I believe, you know, I think every party should get a standard base level of free media attention, and then perhaps in proportion to their support among the populace. It's got to be changed from the sort of product side, not the demand side, because the demand side, people who'll be willing to pay the fees, pay the money for their candidates.
You've got it, Laura.
You know, it's just never going to be controllable, as far as I can see.
We've got legislation pending now that will address the bundling problem. I want to highlight that because of the bundling program, all these presidential candidates can raise more money, a lot more money, by opting out of the public financing system and just taking private special interest money, which is why all the candidates have left and are just out there relying on bundlers. In order to resolve this problem, we've got to develop a strong presidential public financing system, and bipartisan legislation has just been introduced in both the House and the Senate side. On the Senate side, sponsored by Senators Feingold and Collins, that would address this problem. Mm. What it does is it raises the spending ceilings for candidates who participate in the presidential public financing to become realistic, and it provides a lot more public funds for eligible candidates, and critically, it will match any excessive spending by a candidate who's opted out of the system with public funds for all the candidates opting in. So candidates in the public financing system will be able to spend as much as anyone who opts out.
Yeah, well, I would love what's realistic to be completely changed by saying, you know, we're not going to allow our TV broadcasters, and at this point it's also cable and satellite and everywhere else, to set the budget on our races.
Well, the legislation, by the way, does call for some free airtime, so the broadcasters will have to chip in to help pay for this type of program. But I do want to emphasize, I mean, what a disaster this bundling has been for presidential races.
Can you explain?
I mean, literally, under the current presidential public financing law, all the candidates, each candidate would have been limited to spending no more than $49 million in the entire primary season.
God, seems like enough to me.
It is enough. And instead, all these candidates have already reached, or most of the major ones, have reached double that limit, and we're just at January 17th here.
All right, let me take a call. We've got to take some calls here. I'm forgetting about our nice callers. Jean's got a question about this very subject in Napa. Hi, Jean. You got a question for Craig?
Yes, I was wondering, the candidates that are there, I believe Kucinich is against, is for campaign reform. What are the stances of the others? It doesn't sound like Obama was too helpful with that bill on lobbying.
It's confusing.
Can you enlarge on that?
He endorsed the bill. He was instrumental in passing it, as you said, Craig, but then he's got more bundlers than anyone.
Yeah, so Obama was critical in passing the lobby reform legislation, and I want to emphasize that Obama, along with Edwards, have both pledged not to take money from lobbyists or to rely on lobbyists for their fundraising, and both of them are keeping true to their word.
But you say that they're a lobbyist bundlers in both their camps, if only one, I should say, in Edwards' camp.
These, by the way, needs to be clarified as having been persons that were registered as lobbyists as of 2006 and are not currently registered lobbyists. I suspect if any of them did become a currently registered lobbyist, both the Edwards campaign and the Obama campaign would say, okay, no more. You can't participate in the bundling.
But Gene is completely right. Kucinich is the only one on the Democratic side, I think, who forswore all of this stuff.
Along with Gravel.
Ah, you got it. Let's take another call. Thanks so much. Judy in, is it Camus or Camus, Washington?
Yes.
Which one?
It's Camus.
Camus. All right, go for
Washington,
it.
Washington, near Portland, Oregon.
All right.
And I agree 100% with this taking money out of politics. I think we're about the only country that allows us to buy the best government we can buy. So.
And look how good we get.
Yeah.
All right, Judy.
Your first question this morning was who would make the best leader.
Yes.
And as far as I'm concerned, John Edwards is the leader right now. He's the one that isn't taking, you know, his taking public financing. Hillary has cannibalized his health care program.
I had a throwdown fight with somebody the other day about whose health care plan came out first. I mean, it was Edwards's by weeks, and yet
yes.
Hillary's supporters will swear blind it was her.
Yes. And Hillary and Obama and the Republicans didn't get on this bandwagon about corporations and the influence of lobbyists until Edwards showed that the people, it was an issue with us.
Right, right.
And now they're all on it.
Well, you can make a good point, Judy. Thanks for the call. When it comes to leading on the issues, there's no question Edwards is out there. I'm with you. Jan in Denver. Oh, Jan, and then I want to go very quickly to Quinn in Santa Clara. Jan, your question.
Well, it was more of a comment on the leadership style of Hillary, and from everything that I can tell, it's very smooth and brilliant because we have a track record, and I think most people in this country could tell you that the outsourcing of jobs is one of the primary problems with this economy, and yet the Clintons were some of the primary architects of what's happened,
yeah, well,
setting the table for this economy.
Not unconnected from the campaign finance questions that we're talking about, in that we saw a huge explosion of corporate money coming into Democratic Party coffers at the very same time the party was agreeing under Bill Clinton to go forward with the Reagan-Republican plan for NAFTA and free trade, so-called.
Exactly. And where were the Clintons during the huge protests in Seattle?
Well, you could say that about all the candidates, Jan. I hate to say it. Quinn, quickly in Santa Clara, then a response from our caller, and we have to go to break. I mean, from our guest.
Yes, my question is for your guest, who are the major bundlers for the people who are leading in both the Republican and Democratic side?
Excellent.
Thank
Thanks, Quinn.
Yeah, we've been able to codify the bundlers by industry. And by the way, that's been a whole lot of work because none of the candidates will do that for us.
Do I hear a pitch? Send contributions to Public Citizen. Go for it.
They won't even tell us who they – I mean, they give us names at most, but they won't even tell us what their jobs are. So we have to go one by one and codify these 2,500 bundlers. We found the three biggest industries, the law profession, finance, Wall Street, and real estate, are the three biggest industries. Finance.
Wait, give us that again.
The legal profession, and then finance, and then real estate. Those are the three biggest sectors. Finance and real estate tend to favor the Republican candidates, while the legal profession tends to support the Democratic candidates.
I can't restrain myself from saying it is a shame. It is just a shame that anybody in real estate right now is putting any money anywhere other than into the pockets of the poor people who are getting foreclosed on in those in the mortgage crisis.
But even with those industry breakdowns, I do want to emphasize that all these candidates except Edwards have opted out of the public financing system, and they are participating in this privately special finance system of winning the presidency, in which they are racking up debts to special interests who want something from them, and all of the candidates, Democrat and Republican alike, are doing this.
All right. Thanks so much, Craig. People want more information, go to whitehouseforsale.org, and maybe you will feel inclined to bundle a little something for Public Citizen while you're at it. The number to call here is 866-303-2270. In our next hour, we'll take more of your calls, and we'll talk about the role of women in politics in Nevada. The future of Nevada politics is female, say some, and that may work well for Hillary Clinton, or maybe not. I'm Laura Flanders. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active.
The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege.
We're back in our next hour. Among other things, we will talk about whether the percentage of women in a state's legislature and it's women that it's elected to state office, might have anything to do with the fate of, for example, Hillary Clinton in this presidential race. New Hampshire, the second highest percentage of women in its legislature. Nevada is right up there, too. Nevada nominated women in all three congressional districts in 06. Four out of six candidates for statewide office were women, including governor. And when you look at the leadership in the legislature, well, it's like 5 out of 7 or 5 out of 10. It's 5 out of 7 female. You've got an extraordinary lineup of leadership female in Nevada. Is that going to make a difference for Hillary in that state's caucus, which takes place this Saturday? We're going to talk to two people who are very close to this story. One ran for governor last year. The other is now there as the majority whip in the assembly. They've endorsed different candidates. We'll talk about it when we get into it in the next hour. All right, I'm Laura Flanders on the Tom Hartman Program. Let's take some of your calls quickly before the end of this hour. Let's hear from Brett in Waterloo, Illinois. You've been waiting for a while. Hey, Brett.
Yeah, hi. I was just calling concerning the leadership idea.
Yeah.
Which is the use of the bully pulpit. Okay, we have never had a great president, that could not utilize the bully pulpit effectively. And Barack Obama gives a great speech. And the whole idea of that is it puts pressure on the legislators. And that's why I think he's going to be a great leader, because he can utilize the bully pulpit.
Well, all right. Bully pulpit will be utilized in a variety of different ways, though. You can use it to persuade people that they should go to war against countries we shouldn't go to war at. And there's more evidence today that the White House lied. In this case, it was as recently as a year ago about the progress Iraq was making towards reconstruction. You can have a bully pulpit for good or for bad, can't you?
But Barack Obama was against the war, and that's why he showed good judgment at the same time. So he's got judgment. He gives a good speech. He brings people to tears.
You know what? I would add one other thing, Brett, and it's because we have such poor media coverage of elections that this needs to be stated again. Yes, it's the charisma of the leader. Yes, it's the brilliance of the speeches. But you know what? When it finally comes down to effectiveness at the level of campaigning, and I think ultimately at the level of governance, it really does have to do with how you are organized. I mean, how your movement, your organization is structured, how skilled you are in pulling together coalitions, consensus,
exactly,
and all the rest. So I'll add to your point about his ability to give a great speech and use the bully pulpit. Well, he knows what to do when people are inspired by what they hear. His operation on the ground is just simply really good at figuring out what tasks to offer people to do and how to help them do the things they come up with wanting to do themselves. All right, well, we can continue this conversation for sure. I think it's all very interesting. Chris in Eugene, Oregon. Quick, Chris, before the break.
I'd like to say the tragedy of the two front runners being finger puppets for huge corporate money is just terrible. Anybody who really wants the progressive agenda to move forward really needs to start voting for Dennis Kucinich and quit fawning over these people using your hopes and dreams to laugh all the way to power and the bank.
Oh, I hope.
That's the truth.
You're probably right. Should we boycott the networks that have so cut Kucinich out of these debates?
Well, sure, because he's talking exactly what needs to be said, and the power and the money don't want it hurt.
You got it.
Clinton and Obama are in the lead. That's who they serve.
Chris, all right. I'm so sorry. We got to go to break on that grim thought. But we'll come back with more upbeat stuff, I hope. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Tom Hartman. You're listening to Air America Radio.
The Tom Hartman Program, for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. Tom Hartman. Zone with Tom Hartman. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It is, but this isn't Tom Hartman. Tom's away. I'm Laura Flanders. Glad to be with you here this lovely Thursday afternoon. Welcome, welcome, Air America Radio listening world. I'm ever so glad to be with you. All right, our number is 866-303-2270. We have, in the last couple of hours, been talking about leadership style, which kind do you like. We've been talking about money in this presidential primary race. We've been talking, well, we haven't been talking about it yet, but mudslinging has been up there along with money really messing up this race in South Carolina, as far as I can see, but in other states besides. The one thing we haven't talked about yet is what difference, well, we'll talk in this hour a bit about what difference women make. I was telling you about the one thing that Nevada and New Hampshire have in common, which is a unusually high proportion of women in their legislature. In the state assembly in Nevada, where you've got, as far as I can see, three women among the five-person majority leadership team there. In the Senate, you've got an entire leadership team of women. You've had women nominated in all three congressional districts. One who we'll talk to ran for governor last year. Does that maybe make a difference for Hillary Clinton, in the sense that this is a state which is pretty smart about women in office, that has had, as it were, through the last few years, quite an education about how women serve in office, about, not to say they're all the same, but I'm just saying it might be in states where you have more women in office that some of the old stereotypes and the stupid debate has been had already. It's over and done with. And might that help Hillary? Because New Hampshire had the same phenomenon. Second state in the country for the percentage of women in the legislature. I'm just wondering, maybe it makes a difference. We're going to talk to two women who can talk about this firsthand. One, as I said, ran for governor last year. The other is now the majority whip. We will talk in just a bit about that. But the subject that we haven't talked about yet is what difference a recession would make. You had Bernanke out there this morning pitching for the Congress to do economic stimulus fast, do it sooner rather than later. Could you hear the panic in his voice? There's only so much money that George W. Bush can bring back from Saudi Arabia to try to stymie the oncoming or existing recession in this country. Could you believe that? He came back with, what, $20 billion in arms sales with the Saudis, $30 billion with the Israelis. The only people who aren't suffering a recession, it seems to me, are his cronies in the military contracting business. Meanwhile, how smart an idea is it to send bomb guidance systems to Saudi Arabia, do you think? You know, I'm for a end to the arms race. I'm for de-escalating the arms race. We have made such a mess in the Middle East, the last thing it needs is more weapons. But, hey, that's just me. All right, let's take some of your calls. Let's hear from Michael in the Bronx. Hey, Michael. Michael in the Bronx is on line four, line something or other.
Hey, good to talk to you again.
You too. Now, was that your dulcet tones I heard when I was on with Alan Colmes the other night?
Unfortunately, yes. Unfortunately, because that was the first time I was familiar with that particular game. And afterwards, I figured, oops, I really made a boo-boo this time.
Oh, I don't remember that at all. Anyway, I thought you did. I thought that was your voice, and I was glad to hear it. What's up?
Oh, you know me well. But, you know, the thing about the Barack and the Hillary spat that was going on a little while ago.
Yeah, it sounds like you're in traffic, or you've got an alarm in the background there.
Well, I am in traffic.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, the situation was this, that I called another talk show host. You probably know him, Mike Malloy.
Yeah, I've heard
and
of him.
And I spoke to him about what was going on, what I suspected was happening. And the thing is that I suspected the right-wing media have provoked this kind of confrontation, because I know that any and every campaign debate, there is the media, there is the press, and then there was word going on that somebody said to Hillary that, what did you think about what Obama said, this or that, and took it out of context, or it was totally inaccurate, and they pulled the same stunt with Obama regarding Hillary.
So you think the right media is kind of provoking this catfight?
I'm sorry?
You think the right media is provoking this dispute between the two?
And that's what I was thinking, because the Republican leaders, they sure don't have anything to offer for the American people. They can't deal with the issues. They know that they're falling in the polls when it comes to the Democrats and the progressives. So instead of dealing with the issues, they got to turn around with personal attacks, or they've got to turn around and pull these stuff.
Well, you know what, though? I would agree with you, Michael, but you've also got President Clinton in there stirring this stuff up. It's not just the media. I wish it were, but could someone put a leash on this guy? It did not help her campaign when President Clinton, Bill, came out saying what he did about Barack Obama and fantasy. You know, it's just poor choice of language referring to the aspiration, the dream, the confidence, the hope that people have that there might actually be a candidate, you know, that might actually be in the candidacy of Barack Obama, somebody who had opposed the war from the start. I don't know, but it was poor choice of language. And then for President Clinton to come out this week and support the NEA's lawsuit against the locating of caucuses in casinos, that didn't help his wife either. All right, let's take another quick call. Ben in Oregon. Hey, Ben. Ben, are you there? Did we lose Ben? Let's move to Kathy in Oregon.
Okay, thank you. I was on the leadership issue.
Yeah.
So I want to say it's wonderful to hear your voice again, since I so often work.
Oh, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for tuning in.
The leadership issue, I think that Obama is appealing right now because he gives people some hope, and things are so black and dark right now. And I heard someone say, which I really agree with, that he gives a great I Give a Dream speech, but after the warm and fuzzy excitement wears off, you really wonder what he said, because there isn't any substance.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps saying he's this great voice for change, but his voting record's the same as Hillary's, except somewhat less progressive.
Mm-hmm.
Why does he? Well, there's been this question raised, too, about why he doesn't show up for votes that are a little bit more sensitive, or why he votes only present when he is sometimes there for some of those votes.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question, as we anticipate the national holiday for Dr. King's birthday, and we've just marked his actual birthday, it's worth remembering that Dr. King just didn't talk about having a dream.
Yeah.
In the years before he died in particular, he talked about needing to reassess our priorities in the area of warmongering and capitalism. Let's face it. I mean, one of his last speeches, almost exactly a year to the day before he died, when he was talking about the war in Vietnam, he also talked about we have got to reprioritize people over things. We've got to change our attitude to materialism. Alarm bells must have been sounding in corporate headquarters all over the country. Here is a man who was targeting poverty in America with a campaign that many people think is what really got him killed. So I think it's interesting that in all of the discussion about the relevance of the King legacy to today's race, what we're missing is the guy did talk quite a lot of specifics. Now, the one thing that King had was he had Malcolm X at his flank, you know, outflanking him for most of their joint lives. What Obama clearly needs is a movement that will push him and keep him to at least the promises that people think he's made to them, so that when he gets to Washington, he's not just listening to the biggest lobbyist or the loudest voice from the Pentagon. I think that's the only possibility there is for the Obama campaign, is that it has empowered enough people that they could create an alternative power, as it were, in the country, if not now, in the future.
But I think he's too much of a centrist, and I honestly think that when he gets there, that we're not going to see this progressive agenda unless he is really, really pushed.
Well, that's when we come in.
I don't think he has any depth. If you listen to him on the debates, his answers are pretty shallow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know who writes his speeches. I don't know that he writes his speeches. So, but when he's having to think on his feet, I don't think he shows leadership qualities when he thinks on his feet.
All right. Thanks, Kathy. Appreciate your opinion. We're going to take a break and come back. So much to talk about, so little time. We will be back tomorrow, and we'll continue more of this conversation, so don't forget that. In a second, we will be joined by two folks who are going to talk about the role of women in this race, and particularly in Nevada. We'll hear from a couple of women legislators about just what a difference they might make. All right. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to The Tom Hartman Show. We'll be right back.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
What difference do women make? That's what we're going to talk about with our next guests. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Tom Hartman this Thursday afternoon. Our number is 866-303-2270. And let me just make, I'm going to lay out a hypothesis for you. All right, here's a hypothesis that there is a relationship between states where people are familiar with seeing women wielding the legislative gavel, states where women have seen, voters have seen women in high office. There's a relationship between that familiarity with women in government and increased support for Hillary Clinton at the polls. It's just a hypothesis. I'm just going on looking at Iowa and New Hampshire. What's one of the big differences between the two? Well, New Hampshire has the second greatest percentage of women in its legislature, 35.8%. Iowa is way down in the national average and has never elected a woman to Congress or the governor's seat. Why this is relevant, perhaps, is because Nevada, you're not going to hear much about it in the national media, but Nevada is another state where women in government are all over the place. In the last election, Democrats nominated women in all three congressional districts. Four out of six candidates for statewide office were women, including the governor. In the state assembly, you've got women in the majority, among the majority leadership team there. And as far as I can see, women make up the entire leadership team in the Senate. So how might this play out for Hillary Clinton and the rest of the contenders? First up, Dina Titus. Dina is a state Senate minority leader and Democratic National Committee woman. She's also the aforementioned woman who ran for governor. Dina, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
So do you think that there's any sense to what I'm saying here? Is there a relationship, do you
well,
think?
Well, I think there possibly is. And one of the reasons Nevada has been so fortunate, I believe, to have women elected to office is that we're a new state, we're a growing state, lots of new people. Things aren't so institutionalized and so kind of embedded in stone here that women don't have an opportunity to run and be seen as making a difference.
And let's remember, it was Western states who first gave women the vote, if you want to really go back in history. Talk a little bit about your issues, your run, what you learned that might be of relevance to the folks running for the Democratic nomination right now in that state.
Well, one thing I learned is that if you are a woman running, there's still a glass ceiling out there, and there's still some sexism. There's no question about it.
But you got the bruises on your head to show for it?
Yeah, that seems to be mostly in rural Nevada, where there are a lot more cowboys than there are cowgirls. But we didn't run on women's issues, but with the exception of the right to choose. Mm-hmm. That was something that was important because that was a real contrast with my opponent. I think what you see in Nevada are a lot of single working moms. They work a lot of part-time jobs, so they don't qualify for benefits, so they're concerned about education and safety for their children and health care.
Now, the other thing that's interesting is that you talk about the power of labor, and labor, the stereotype in the media is still the good old white guy. The reality in a state like yours is the largest labor union, the culinary workers, the folks who represent that work in the hotels and the restaurants and the airports and the casinos, that's a union disproportionately women, female and people of color, isn't it?
Well, that's right. There are a lot of women in service jobs in Nevada, so whether it's nurses or public employees, teachers, and in those jobs you mentioned, back of the house gaming, you find a lot of women.
So how will this play out, do you think, for Hillary Clinton, based on what you're seeing? And how is her organization, I'm a big one for organization on the ground, what does it look like? How are women involved?
Well, it's huge. I've got two young women staying with me right now who've come out from Boston to work on it. She was here on the ground first and put the most resources and effort into the state. So they are doing precinct captain meetings. They are doing rallies. They are doing training all around the state. And I think she's got the ground game won. If this were a primary, I think it's no question about it. It's just some of the funny nuances of the caucus system that make it more difficult for all the candidates and make it harder to poll for or predict.
Now, that goes back to the difference between Iowa and New Hampshire. Iowa caucus state, New Hampshire primary state. Do you think women have a harder time in those caucuses where they are face-to-face with their neighbors, their friends, maybe even the people they work with?
Well, that could be. Women don't tend to be as aggressive about pushing their own opinion on others, and sometimes that's what it takes in a caucus to win over those who are for candidates who don't qualify or those who are undecided. So that may be a difference. Also, you got to remember, a lot of women in those kind of jobs that we just described are working on Saturdays, so it's harder for them to get out. And if they have young children, that's another handicap.
Yeah, so, I mean, I know that you've come out for Hillary Clinton, isn't that right?
That's true.
How do you feel about her now being associated, thanks to Bill, with this lawsuit to stop the caucus sites right there in the workplace?
Well, she has not been involved in that. This was put forth by the teachers union and some activists who are committed to Edwards, too, which doesn't ever seem to get mentioned. The big problem with the sites on the strip, I believe, is not that you put sites there because you want to give everybody an opportunity to vote, but that those sites get a larger percentage of delegates. And I think that has been lost in all the conversations.
Now, well, you're a delegate. You'll be out there Saturday morning doing your job. We'll pick up after the break with Sheila Leslie, who's a Democratic Assemblywoman and Majority Whip there in the Assembly. Thank you so much, Dina. Good luck, everybody. It's so exciting just to see how many people are involved and engaged.
Well, call me back anytime.
We sure will. Thanks,
Thank
Dina
you.
Titus.
Bye-bye.
We'll check back in with you. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program with you. You see, that accent's just contagious, isn't it? She sounds great. All right, when we come back, Sheila Leslie, she's great too. Stay tuned. There's a lot more. Tom Hartman Show right after this.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show. I'm just sitting in for Tom for the day, although I will be back tomorrow. Tomorrow among our guests. Well, we'll hear from Hugh Jackson of the Las Vegas Gleaner with the latest on the Nevada primary. We'll also, I think, talk a little bit about nanotechnology and what may or may not be getting into our food. We'll hear from the labor movement, I think, on their take, a variety of different people on the primary coming up this week in Nevada, and a whole lot more as yet to be decided. In any case, let me get a quick caller in before we go to our next guest. He's been waiting a long time. Ben in Oregon, welcome to the program.
Yes, Laura, this is Ben in Aloha, Oregon. I've got a couple of things I would like to say. Being civil and respectful and bipartisan is one thing, but out-and-out stupidity is another. If these three leaders in the Democratic Party don't realize that 06 was about the war and occupation in Iraq, then they should start talking to people.
It is extraordinary. I mean, I read more than one story this week, and I thought they were completely on target, saying, you know, it has become the invisible issue.
We have to get out of there. We need to get out of there immediately, and I don't think all three of them are there.
No.
Iraq is not resolved, and we need to get our people and our economy out of there.
And let's face it, since they've iced Dennis Kucinich out of these debates and Richardson withdrew, there is nobody laying out a clear position on Iraq of those top three. There's not one who really has a different position than all the others, I don't think. Richardson was the only one who talked about residual forces. They all now talk about no permanent bases, but when you ask them, well, as they were asked on Tuesday, can you actually say that all the troops will be out by 2013? They still say no, because they've got to defend the embassy, they've got to do this and that. Add it all up, you've got tens of thousands of troops left.
that embassy should be turned into condominiums.
You're not
given
kidding.
To the Iraqis.
You're not kidding.
I would like to say that here in the state of Oregon, we have the Democrats have a very large pool of very bright and young women in politics here. We've got a lady named Diane Rosenbaum who was with the Communications Workers of America, a union leader, and now she's in the state legislature. I think we're very fortunate here.
All right. Well, thanks for that, Ben. I appreciate it. That goes to our subject at hand, which is, does a state's familiarity with women in elected office have any bearing on their willingness to vote for a woman for president? Here to pick up that conversation is Sheila Leslie. She is a Democratic Assemblywoman. I think she's majority whip, and she's part of a leadership team in the state government there in Nevada that is overwhelmingly female. And as you just heard from Dina Titus, there is a lot of women in statewide office too. Sheila, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me.
So I laid out this hypothesis that may be complete bunk, but that did seem to me interesting that one of the things that distinguished or was the difference between Iowa and New Hampshire is New Hampshire has this very high proportion of women in government, some 35-36%. Do you think it makes a difference?
That's an interesting thought. Here in Nevada, you know, we are very independent. We're very libertarian more than anything. And I think that's one reason women have done so well in Nevada in terms of elected office. We also don't pay our elected officials hardly anything, and that's my other theory of why
it's
we
like
have so many women
childcare, right?
In public office. But here in the presidential campaign, I mean, it's really not breaking down by gender so much as by the Democratic Party establishment, which has overwhelmingly gone for Clinton. And then there are some Democrats like myself that tend to be less part of the party structure and more independent. And here in the northern part of the state, it's quite fascinating. There's five Democratic Assembly people. Three have gone for Edwards, two have gone for Obama, zero have gone for Clinton.
Interesting. So, well, the place that Edwards is in the polls in Nevada is really stunning, given what the national image is of his campaign. As far as I can see, he is kind of neck and neck with everybody else, even though when they talk about front runners, most of the media leave him out.
Well, in the polling in Nevada, you cannot put any weight in the polling right now. What I have seen on the ground here is just an amazing, amazing grassroots effort by all the campaigns. But, of course, I'm associated with the Obama campaign, and that's the organization I'm most familiar with. It's amazing, Laura, the new people that are that campaign is bringing in, the young people, Republicans who are switching independents. And they're not polling those people because those people haven't traditionally voted in the Democratic caucus.
That's right. So, it's very hard to get polled if you are a first-time voter. It's hard to get polled if you're using a cell phone.
Well, and I hardly ever answer my home phone. Don't tell anyone. But I use my cell phone exclusively.
Well, you've said it now.
Oh, sorry, people. But so I haven't been polled once this whole time.
What's happened to the issues? I'm going to ask you why you decided to pitch for Obama. But before then, where are the issues that you care about in this debate? And I asked your friend Bob Fulkerson earlier on, has it made a difference to the issues that you care about that your caucus is A, a caucus, and B, happening so early in the primary race?
Well, it's been very exciting in Nevada. We've never had the opportunity to get to know the presidential candidates of any party and any race up close and personal because we've never been involved. So the issues I care about, actually, I feel have been pretty well discussed. The war, you know, the national media may not be discussing it, but it gets discussed in every meeting I go to, in every town hall. Health care, of course, education, the economy. I feel like we've had a pretty good debate on the issues. Senator Clinton made a really good point the other night, I thought, in the debate in Las Vegas when she said, when we're talking about the war, and she said, just compare the Democratic positions with the Republican positions. They're all gung-ho, got to, you know, stay the course, more troops.
100 years occupation, if you listen to John McCain. What about leadership style, Sheila? One of the subjects we've talked on today's program is what kind of leader do people want? Very, you know, black and whitely put. On the one hand, sort of, you know, hands-on, I will be know where I'm doing first day in office, and I've got the ideas all clear. On the other, more kind of bring together all the consultants, all the advisors, and decide on our policy from there. Do you think women have a different leadership style? You've seen it there in the assembly, or is this just a purely a personal matter of style?
Yeah, I'm kind of researching that for a book. I want to write a book someday on that very topic.
Oh.
So that's quite an interesting question, I think. I have seen women of all leadership styles, so I'm not really convinced that it's certainly definitely a gender issue so much as a personal style. Although I do think women do tend to work more collaboratively. They tend to listen better. Those are the kinds of distinctions that I would draw. Now, Senator Obama, even though he's not a woman, I think of the three candidates, has the most collaborative unity style, which is kind of interesting.
And is that why you decided to endorse him?
No, it's much bigger than that. For me, the major overriding issue was the war. And I think he had the judgment to say no to the war early on. He's stuck by that. He's an extremely intelligent man. He's married to an extremely intelligent woman. And I believe he will bring just a much higher caliber of cabinet members, bring good people into government. And I think he's the right man at the right time. I think what our country needs right now, after being traumatized for the last 8 years, is somebody who represents not just change, you know, everybody's co-opted that word, but unity, bringing people together, standing for something bigger. And I think the message that an Obama victory will send to the world will literally change the course of history.
Mm. There's a nasty little story circulating around the web right now, nasty in the sense that it's disturbing. It suggests that the members of the culinary union, there may be some sort of intimidation or misinformation happening.
Oh,
there.
I read that.
Have you heard
story
about that?
There's a million little gossip stories in Nevada right now on both sides of what's happening. I think I go back to what I said before, that Nevadans are very independent. They're going to vote for who they believe in, despite there's been certainly this whole thing with the lawsuits, which I just saw a flash got thrown out.
Yep.
I don't know if you've heard that yet.
No, I didn't. That's breaking news for sure.
Yes. Which makes sense to me, because those rules were decided way back last March. And,
yeah.
You know, come on.
I think the more caucus sites, the better.
Yeah, absolutely. Let people
period.
Vote. So I think Nevadans can make up their own minds. We always do. And I just don't buy into, I try not to buy into the gossip.
All right, Sheila. Thank you so very much. It's great to talk to you. And, wow, it's going to be exciting on Saturday.
It sure will, Laura. Thank you.
Talk to you again soon. All right, I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get an update from Washington. What stories are breaking there? Washington. Yeah, that's a place over east side of the country. Yeah. You know, a lot of stuff happens there. Kind of. Most of it really not that important, but some of it. Your power is in your hands, people, and right now it's locally where you live that you're making a difference. 866-303-2270, that's the number to call. When we come back, more.
Tom Hartman Program, taking back the mainstream media.
3 hours a day,
5 days a week.
The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the 200,000 health and hospital workers at SEIU 1199, fighting for quality, affordable health care for all Americans. Keeping our families healthy should be a right, not a privilege.
We're back. Rights, not privileges. Well, I think it is our right, just about our right, to find out what's happening in the nation's capital round about this hour on the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Tom, and Ellen Ratner's there on the other line in D.C. Anything important happening in that little old town, Ellen?
Well, you know, Laura, we are not having a recession. We are having a softening of the economy.
Oh, I'm so relieved. I thought for a minute there, with all the foreclosures and the dollar in the toilet and no jobs to be had, and I can't buy a darn thing for what's in my wallet, that we were in a recession.
Well, I was with your friend Paul Jay, and we were laughing hysterically about it today. Also,
just a softening. Well, you know how those guys in Washington don't like to think about softenings.
Exactly. And then he said, I mean, this is, I hope Saturday night, but not Saturday, the Daily Show picks this up. He says, the baseline outlook for real activity in 2008 has worsened. The downside risks to growth have become more pronounced in particular.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. What does that mean?
But didn't he also say we need economic stimulus and we need it now?
Pretty amazing. Well, what is happening is the president is having a conference call today with Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic leadership, Harry Reid, and the Republican leadership to see what kind of stimulus package they need. The Republicans were, first of all, trying to make the tax cuts permanent, but the Dems resisted that, and it does not look like that is going to go in. And the other thing Bernanke said today was that fiscal policy actions may be useful. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, thanks a lot. They may be useful indeed. I mean, it does seem you got Bernanke doing whatever kind of obfuscation follow, you know, he's doing where he is. But I'm worried that in Congress, all we're going to get is kind of electoral posturing. I mean, this is the perfect moment for the Dems to make their argument for stimulus and the GOP to make theirs for tax cuts. And we'll just be going down into depression before any of this gets sorted out.
Exactly. The other thing that people are, well, there's several things people are talking about today, but the Senator Leahy endorsement of Obama, he likened it to 1968. When he was a young prosecutor, he said that he likened it to Robert Kennedy. He said that he has a sense of hope who brings us together. And what's also interesting on that is the State Teachers Union and the Clinton campaign are now saying that they don't want there to be special areas of caucuses. Well, the problem is, as you know, a lot of the casino workers, restaurateurs, et cetera, who are working in there have endorsed Obama, and some of these special places are actually caucus sites, are near or in casinos.
We just heard that that suit brought by the NEA had been thrown out.
Well, it is, yes, but what is happening is now that Leahy is saying that part of his endorsement is because he thinks if you shut people out of the nominating process, then you are shutting them out of the American process altogether. And that is part of the reason he went to Obama.
Well, I'm with him on that, absolutely. I think if you care about the electoral system, you can't be the one seen to be out there trying to stop students from voting in Iowa and trying to make it more difficult for casino workers to vote in Las Vegas. One of the things, though, that I wonder about, you know, Leahy's gone out on a limb at least a little to talk about civil liberties and human, you know, rights and justice and the Patriot Act and all the rest. Has he given Barack Obama a little bit of an easy ride here in that the guy hasn't really made much of those issues on his campaign so far?
Well, in fact, if you go to his website just a couple days ago, I don't know if it's changed now, but you ask for his foreign policy, they basically say it's coming.
Uh-huh. And what about home policy?
But what I'm saying is that, and I spoke at a college this morning and somebody said to me, well, I'm an Obama supporter, but I don't know where he is on a lot of these issues. He's going to have to move very, very quickly.
Well, he's going to move and we've got to move, Ellen. I mean, clearly what's going to make all the difference is to have a movement that can push this guy, a movement that can try to keep him honest. If he doesn't have people really pushing him, it's true. He could, it seems to me, go any place. Now, he does have a record, I should be clear, in Chicago. I mean, he was one of the people that helped to bring in videotapes into the detention centers, into the prisons there after there was a horrendous torture scandal involving the Chicago police. So, you know, maybe there's a background there. Anything else we should know about Ellen?
Oh, yeah. The Pentagon is moving a little backwards on what the secretary said yesterday about NATO's ability to fight in Afghanistan. He said that he believes that they're actually moving towards an ability to fight in Afghanistan. He yesterday said that certain countries like Canada and the Brits, et cetera, could not fight the insurgency, but he seemed to back off that after NATO went completely nuts on him. also, the general who is in charge of the transition command testified before the House Armed Services this morning and said that he does think that the Iraqis are going to give about 80,000 soldiers, but he said they will not before the end of 2008, but they were certainly not going to be ready to stand alone at this point. So that just means a lot more time in Iraq.
So we've got a little backing up by the Pentagon, a little softening in the economy. I think we're really in big trouble.
I do, too. But I love the softening of the economy. What an image.
Oh, please. All right, I don't want to think about that. And we're going to have to think about it because any good nighttime comedian worth his or her salt is going to go to town this evening.
One last thing. The president said that we are moving too slowly in Darfur.
Well, yeah, that's sort of when you don't move at all. That's what you called too slowly. How about Kenya?
Nothing has happened. In fact, I'm going to go to Darfur, I think, with Tom Hartman in March, and we'll see for ourselves.
Maybe you could just detour and go to Kenya and try to stop any kind of ethnic killing before it really takes off.
Well, in fact, we had a briefing on that from the United Nations. Probably almost a 500,000 displaced internal people now in Kenya.
And where is it in our papers?
I'm sorry?
Where is it in our newspapers, on our nightly news?
Yeah, oh, it's nowhere. Nowhere.
Page 912. All right, Ellen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again soon. I'm Laura Flanders. I've been sitting in for Tom Hartman. We'll be back tomorrow with some, well, we're going to talk again about Nevada to some extent. We will hear from Hugh Jackson, who's just a fabulous blogger at the Las Vegas Gleaner. He'll have the latest there. We're also going to hear about nanotechnology in our food, in our skincare products, and how poorly this stuff is or is being tested by our health authorities. I'm about to choke from something caught in my throat, so we may go to break early. No, it's true. And we'll also be hearing your calls, as per usual. I'm Laura Flanders. You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Show here on Air America Radio. And before I completely lose it, have a great evening.